This is a podcast from Minute Media.
You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast. I am your host, Mitch Anderson, and I'm here with Matt O'Leary, whose voice still sounds like he's some sort of horror movie villain.
It's not good, buddy. I don't know if you remember last week I was saying, I have a slight tickle in my throat. I'm going to try your whiskey trick. Well, it's been a little downhill since then, buddy. We've been through the ringer, but I will say 2 days now on a prescription medication, so hoping that turns me around by the weekend, but it's been rough, as you can clearly tell.
Yeah, hopefully this is not indicative of my medication. Clearly, I'm not a doctor, so don't take medication advice from me. But my whiskey trick usually helps me, but it clearly did not help Matt here at all. I'm struggling to find my mouse on my three monitors here. So let me switch this up because I'm looking at you downwards. It just feels weird to look. This is much better. So today we're going to do things a little bit differently in so much as I'm going to do most of the talking for what are clearly obvious reasons here. Give Matt his vocal cords a little bit of rest. There's a lot of things to talk about since last week. The 13-game road trip. Pollock is out. Bailey might be out. The UBS is about to open, and we're going to do Down on the Farm as well. So let's get to the first thing here and talk about the road trip. The Islanders finished the road trip in Florida, go 5-6-2 over it, and there are varying opinions on how this thing went. I'd love to hear what you think about it, Matt. Like, where are you at on this 5-6-2 road trip?
Not ideal, but it could have been so much more catastrophic. I'm not hitting the panic button. I know a ton of people have hit that button. That's not to say that I'm satisfied, but all things considered, on a 13-game road trip, getting 12 points over that stretch, I'd sign up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it feels like people's panic button or panic finger has been hovering over the button for the last couple of weeks there. And I get it, right? Like, they're not winning. They're not technically 500, although they're pretty close, right? 12 points from a possible 26 is pretty close to 500 on the road, mind you, right? And so, like, this doesn't look great, but it's not the end of it all, right? Like, there's still a lot of games to go. We've got 13 of 82 done. So there's, what, 69 games left? Nice. That's a lot of hockey left. There's a lot of hockey still left to play. 5-6-2 doesn't sound good. And considering how it ended as well, not just specifically the Florida game, but the last four games where they lose all four of them and they score, what, a combined four goals, I think? No, two goals over those four games, isn't it? Or four goals? Yeah, it's four.
I could tell you in a second for sure, but specifically in Florida, it didn't go very... Yeah, it was four over that four. obviously, you don't want to end your road trip on a four-game losing streak. But it's... With Tampa and Florida specifically, those are two very difficult places to play, as is. And at the end of a 13-game road trip, you know what? I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt a little bit with those two.
Yeah, so like, and we have to remember they've been through this before. And by this specifically going 5-6-2 on the road. Last year, their first 13 road games, they were 5-6-2. And when you look at how things differ between last year's 5-6-2 and this year's, there's not a whole lot of difference, right? So I broke it down for goals for and against, shots for and against, power play and penalty kill to give a sense of where they are and on some of the most obvious categories. And when you got, so I'm going to do last year first, this year second. Last year, goals for 2.08. This is per game. Goals against 2.46. So they're not scoring a whole lot, not really allowing a whole lot, but still. 29.4 shots for, 26.2 shots against. Power play 15%, gross, but remember that's last year. Penalty kill 79.5. This year, 2.23 goals for, 2.92 goals against, youch. 30.2 shots for, 33.2 shots against, 12.5% on the power play, yee, and 83.3% on the PK. There's not a wild difference here, right? Like, they're not totally a different team on the road than they were last year, it seems.
No, which I think is a little bit expected. And when all of these are right in a row, back to back to back, I feel like it just amplifies those issues a little bit more so, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And we have to consider how early in the season we are. Like, they are 13 games in. The season started a little bit later than it usually does, right? I think game one was October 14th. I think it was two weeks into the season or into the month, when it's usually like October 5th, October 6th. So you're adding a whole extra week off there. And then consider all the breaks between games. How many like 3 to 4 day breaks have we already seen the Islanders have to deal with? And I know that's supposed to help them. You know, you're able to get back home, maybe recharge a bit. But that still means you're packing, unpacking constantly, constantly. And so that's not really, they're not able to settle. And so 13 games into the season, they haven't yet settled. And it's, to me, it seems clear in the results.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, there were some pretty decent performances in there. And I do think people like Zdeno Chara has turned a corner a little bit. I'm not saying that he's been phenomenal the last stretch here, but it's gotten significantly better. So there's, you could find a silver lining there. But I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, it wasn't a perfect road trip, and there's obviously work to be done. But now, what, four of your next six are at home?
Yeah. So, like, and there are a lot of back-to-backs there. They're close together. So you're going on a more, I'm not going to say consistent run, because that's not really the word, but you're able to stabilize a little bit more because you're constantly in action, right? You don't have the time to sit, decompress type of thing, which may sound like something players might want to do, like all of us do at the end of a workday, but you want to get into a rhythm, and they haven't been able to do that, even if that's been on the road. Right, when you go on a road trip, you usually bang out a couple of games in a row here. You might have a two-day break, maybe three-day break at the end of it to kind of say like, okay, you've gone on six, seven road games, let's chill a bit. And even then, six or seven is a lot. This has not been the case. It's been 13 games and it's been three-day break here, four-day break there. So they haven't been able to establish a rhythm here, and that's really not been to their benefit.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, we saw it numerous times, and still, especially in the last four games, they allowed 19 goals in four games. That's brutal. I think just defensively, especially, like, it's bad that they're not scoring, but defensively it was just so bad at a lot of points throughout this little run here that I think they just need to, when they get back now, you know, today, in the next few days here before playing Calgary on Saturday, they have to work on getting their infrastructure right. I think that's the biggest thing.
It really is. Get back to those fundamentals and do the things that you do well, and that should help. We also have to remember, when we look at the standings, that they've got games in hand on just about everyone. The only other team they don't have a game in hand on is Columbus. So they've got ground to make up on everyone in the division. Some teams like Washington and the Rangers, they've got three games in hand on. Three. That's pretty good. Not pretty good, but that's in their favor, right? And a lot of these games are going to be at home. Where the Islanders, I'm just trying to bring it up last year here, so just, you know, wait for a second while I load that up. We're 21-4-3 at home. 21-4-3. That's insane. Yep. They were so good at home. Now, obviously, this isn't the same home that they're going to now, but it is their home, and they're going to look to establish a new Fort Neverlose. So that is going to help them.
Yeah, without a doubt. And as you said, it is different in that it's a new building, but, I mean, are you going to tell me the atmosphere on Saturday is not going to be insane?
I really hope your voice is ready to be lost again after Saturday.
Yeah. My goal is to get this thing back and then lose it again on Saturday. That's it.
Yeah. On purpose this time. And yes. I know why you're losing it.
Yes. Oh, my God.
But before we start talking about UBS, because we're going to get to that in a second here, I think we should now transition into, because you mentioned something, getting back to the fundamentals. Well, what might not help them do that is the loss of at least one key player, maybe two. And the players I'm referencing here are, and you probably already know it, Ryan Pollock is out 4 to 6 weeks. Ayoy. And Josh Bailey is out for COVID-related illness for whoever knows how long.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with Pollock because with all due respect to Bailey, that is the much bigger blow, especially when you consider how poorly the defense has been playing. But I'm not going to lie, that scares me a little bit because that's one of the two guys on that unit where you cannot afford to lose.
Right, and they haven't even been playing together, right? The defense has been not so poor that they had to split them up, but to strengthen the D-core, they had to split them up. And I guess that does kind of say, like, the D-core was so bad they needed to split them up, but they did, and now one of them's gone. So that leaves them on the right side with Scott Mayfield and Noah Dobson, who has been inconsistent. Scott Mayfield is what he is. I think we're all used to that. And so now you lose a guy who's playing 22 to 23 minutes, was your number one guy because he was playing both more of a defensive game, but also an offensive game as well, playing on the penalty kill, on the power play, 5-on-5, and you lose him 4 to 6 weeks. As your schedule and as you start establishing that rhythm, right, they're at home, they've got a bunch of games, and he's gonzo. That is not, yeah, you're right, that's a warning sign. And we saw what happened 2 years ago, right, when they lost Adam Pellick for a while. They lost him and things just sunk, right? They just could not get back up again.
So in that area, do you think they run out the same decor that we saw against Florida, or do you think we're seeing a change here?
Well, so I'm glad you say that. The Bridgeport Islanders played today and Robin Salo was not in the roster. So that doesn't necessarily say that he's being called up, but we know he's not injured, or it doesn't seem like he's injured, but it could be, right? Like, we have to remember, it could be an injury. It could be Brent Thompson being like, lols, I'm going to troll everyone, although I doubt it. I really, really doubt that. He's played Robin Salo every game this year. There's no reason to take him out. And it could be COVID again. Not again, but it could be COVID. Probably not. This is probably, it is most likely him coming up, but we don't know that yet. We'll probably find out tomorrow when they practice. But to answer your question, do they roll the same decor out? I'm not entirely sure, because if Robin Salo comes up, you can't say like, cool, we'll run a team with Dobson, Aho, and Salo in it. No, the two of those guys are playing and one of them is sitting. And then the rest of those guys, obviously Pellick, Chara, and Green are going to play as well.
Right. So my thing is, I guess Salo comes in for Aho at that point. Like, I'm trying to think who they would take out to get him in. That's the only logical thing that would make sense, right?
That's the only one. It really is. And that's unfortunate for Aho, because he played well in the two games that he played. He played against Tampa and he played against Florida. He averaged, not average, but he hit over 20 minutes in both of them. I think he hit 23-something against Tampa. He played really well. You know, he had some mistakes in there, but we have to remember, he's played a total 3 professional hockey games at any level, that's NHL and AHL, in 1 year and 9 months. He went 1 year and 9 months playing just 3 competitive hockey games. Yeah, he's going to be a little rusty, but still they played him 23 minutes against Tampa and then 20 minutes against the Florida Panthers. Although Scott Mayfield being hurt ejected didn't help, but still.
Right. No, exactly. So in that, I mean, I hope we see a situation where he comes in and is an impact player right away, like what we got with Devon Toews. But I don't know if it's necessarily fair on him to have that as the floor expectation.
Yeah, you're right. Like, we're not setting him up to fail necessarily, but we're giving him a pair of shoes that are already pretty big, right? Like, yeah. Here's some size, some Shaq-sized shoes. That was really hard for me to say. And he's like, guys, my feet, you know, they're not that big. What am I supposed to do? Like, just go ahead, do it, go. We're not setting him up to fail necessarily, but the expectations are high on this kid that if he doesn't perform there, I'm worried that people are going to turn on him immediately. But they have to see this through, they being the Islanders, because the trade market isn't something they can turn to right now. Because everyone's just going, like, cool. All right, we want your first. We want this guy. We want that guy for anyone. You want Samuel Giroud? Great. Give us anything and everything. And the Islanders aren't in a position to do that. They don't have to, or they shouldn't have to. So they have to go through the due diligence of seeing what Robin Salah brings to the table.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I mean, I really do think he's going to get that opportunity now at this point. And like I said, I hope he flourishes with it. He's a really talented kid.
Yeah, he can move the puck well. He plays on the power play. He's got 3 power play points for the Bridgeport Islanders this year. He's put up 8 total points. He can skate well. He can move the puck well. We saw him at training camp play well. So, like, things are looking like he could be the player the Islanders need. But we'll see. Can he be Devontae's 2.0? And what I mean by that is come in during an injury and just stake a claim. Just plant a flag and be like, I am not leaving. Thou shalt not pass me down to the AHL is what he will say.
I hope so. I really hope that's the case. But to get to Josh Bailey for a second,
yes.
Complicated discussion because I am not someone who is an anti-Bailey person. But at the same time, I think it's fair to say the Islanders needed a little bit more from him. And him going down right now, obviously with COVID, wishing him the best in his, you know, recovery there. It doesn't help anything when you're trying to get your offense in gear with the core that you were expecting all year.
You're right. And he's very much the core. He's in their top 6, top 9, consistently playing a lot on the power play, sometimes on the penalty kill, definitely at 5-on-5. He's an important piece to them. But he hasn't necessarily done very well this year. He's got that one game against Vegas where he was lights out. He was pretty good against the Winnipeg Jets. But other than that, he's been pretty anonymous and on negative side. And what I'm referencing here is game score. Those are the only 2 games that I've already mentioned. And then he was barely a positive against Columbus and Minnesota. Outside of that, he was a negative. Every day against the Florida Panthers the first time out, -2.56. He was atrocious in game 2. So like he hasn't necessarily been great. And I'm a believer. It's in my Twitter profile.
Right.
I really like this player, but he hasn't done enough. So having him out now it isn't necessarily good in terms of establishing that that chemistry, not chemistry, but that, oh my God, what is the word I'm looking for here? Oh, the word is escaping me. Regardless, let's move from Bailey a little bit and say, because Bailey is out, there is now an opportunity open for a guy like Kiefer Bellows, who did pretty well against the Florida Panthers, I thought. His defensive game allowed him to have the best game score on the entire team.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise. And, you know, something I will give him credit for, I think he's been much more physical in the games that I've seen him recently.
Yeah, and he needed to do that, specifically the defensive side of things, right? He needed to assert himself more because he's not necessarily a small player, right? Like, he's a decent-sized guy. I'm trying to bring up his card here for game score, and I just can't find it because I guess I'm skimming it. I'm not actually reading, but it doesn't necessarily matter. He hasn't played a whole lot, but when he has played, he's been 50-50, right? Like, he's got the one game where he was, all right, yeah, didn't really see you. And then now this game against the Florida Panthers, you're going, all right, damn, Kiefer Bellows, see what you're doing there. Picked up a point on the Palmieri goal, so that's nice. And like you said, he was being physical. His defensive game was good. Those are the things you want to see from Kiefer Bellows, right? He's playing good away from the puck, and he's playing good on the puck. And you're saying, God damn, all right, roll with the Kiefer, right? Like, this might be the right time, unfortunately for Josh Bailey, to be out, because Kiefer Bellows now can worry about, not have to worry about, like, I'm not going to be in the lineup tomorrow, and just kind of worry about, like, these are the things that I have to do. These are the fundamentals I have to perform, and if I do that, my spot in this lineup will be cemented. Now, of course, I don't think he's going to play Josh Bailey off the team, but if he does well, it allows the Islanders to explore other options.
Right, like potentially flipping him in a trade.
Yeah, it really does, right? Like, I don't necessarily want to see him go, but if you can have him perform well and have his stock rise from virtually nothing on the trade market to okay, the St. Louis Blues are going, all right, we'll bite on that for Vladimir Tarasenko. It's going to take a lot more than just him, but like we're willing to bite on him. Deal. That is an upgrade for the Islanders that they need to make.
Yeah, without a doubt. So it just, like you said, I like the word flexibility. It does give the Islanders some more flexibility if he could play.
Yeah, exactly. So sucks that Josh Bailey's out. Specifically, it sucks that he's got COVID, right? Like confirmed COVID. That really sucks. Hopefully he's fine. He stayed back in Florida. So like hopefully he's resting well underneath the sun and the warm weather. But like get back soon, Josh Bailey, just because on a human level type of thing.
Of course.
But to move from Pollock and Bailey to the UBS. So in 3 days now, the UBS Arena will officially open for Islanders fans. How stoked are you from a level of 10 to 11?
A million. all the way up. That's why I am drowning myself in this prescription medicine that I got from my doctor. Like I need to get my voice right so I could be back in the building and feeling good. But long overdue for, you know, the team, the fan base and everything. And you kind of talked about, well, we just did. I kind of feel for Bailey and Pollock who aren't going to be able to experience that. Like they deserved it. They're two of the longer tenured Islanders at this point.
Yeah, they deserve to be there out on the ice. Like, I'm sure they'll be, well, Bailey might not be in the building because of COVID, but Ryan Pollock probably will be somewhere. They'll be experiencing it from a relative distance, that is, but they're not going to be the ones on the ice. And that's obviously a whole different level. But you're right. For the fans, this is a long time coming. We all love the Nassau Coliseum. Every single one of us love it. But it was time for a new place. And so now that they have it, and now that we can go in the doors within 3 days, holy cow, I can't wait. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. Obviously, everyone's the same way. A lot, maybe not a lot, but a number of people have already seen what it looks like on the inside. And with some of the pictures that we've seen, oh my God, this place is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, I can't wait to just be in there and experience it for myself, but this week, kind of as like the promo week continues and more pictures come out, it's just everything I think we were hoping for and more.
The first thing, I can't wait to walk into that grand hall and just like experience the grandness of it all, right? Like just the huge space it is, looking up at like what they have is essentially stars up on the ceiling there. I can't wait. And then to me, the one big moment is when you walk in and you can see the arena and the ice. Oh, I'm already getting flutters here.
Right, because you're going to go up the escalator or up the stairs and see it from the concourse, which is really, really cool. You didn't have that at the Coliseum.
No, I really can't wait. And you're right, like the concourse is going to be massive. We're all going to be able to walk through with it, holding hands, if we will.
Yeah.
Bathrooms galore. Everyone's got their own bathroom, which is going to be incredible. Don't have to wait. Don't have to hold it in. Yeah. I remember the first time I went, leaving 5 minutes left in the first, saying, I got plenty of time, not getting back to 5 minutes left in the second. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that'll do it. If you try to do a bathroom and food run at the same time, you're screwed.
Yeah, it was not a good time. Not very smart on my behalf there. But it's going to be good. I can't wait to be there with everyone. But like this, like you said, I think the one big thing is this is long overdue, and you can see the attention to detail that the ownership and the people who built the place or designed it had for a bunch of things. Like we mentioned in the last show, we're going to have, oh my God, why can't I offside? We're going to have blue line essentially there as well. But it goes beyond that, right? Like the color scheme inside, you've got pictures of the Islanders up on the wall. That wasn't a thing at the Barclays Center. It just didn't happen.
No, it's ours, which is different. I mean, the Coliseum was ours too, but this is different. It's a new building. It's a great situation and it's ours. Like it's just the extra element.
Right. Like this new arena is going to allow the Islanders to jump into the modern era, not just physically because they have a new arena, but they can accommodate a whole lot more. And while the Islanders fan base isn't large in numbers, it's large in character. That's for damn sure. It's not large in numbers, but they're on an island that has 8 million people on it. 8 million. And while a lot of those people have already formed their allegiances because other teams have been around, But if this team keeps on winning, there are new generations of fans popping up every day. Every day. If they keep winning, winning breeds that kind of growth in terms of the fan base, and they will be able to fully well accommodate 20,000 people at the arena and more, right? Like, we've already seen the wait list for season tickets is longer than myself. It is... The fan base is growing, and this arena is just kind of a beacon to show, like, we are not just some small little fan base anymore. We mean business.
Well, I mean, look at it with the run last year in particular. It just, that, to me, felt like the biggest one. And sure, with every playoff run, you're going to get, you know, people jumping on the bandwagon, which is, you know, I'm all for that. That's fun. That's part of it. But it just shows, you know, how big this thing could really get. And it's cool, too, to see like the other local teams, like when they would have guys from like the Jets go, or like, I don't know, any of the teams, just like it could be like a hub almost for Long Island and New York culture in a way.
Absolutely. And it needs to be. And I think they're trying to do that because, again, 8 million people, that's a whole lot, right? Like, you tap into that, there's a big fan base there. And like, again, the Islanders have a big character fan base. They don't have a big number fan base, but that changes. That'll change. Those characters will start to influence more and more people to be like, all right, I'm starting to pay attention to this team. All right. And then the winning? Hep-a-lai. Look at the Islanders are growing from a small to medium to maybe half, like kind of large fan base eventually.
Right. And that's the thing too. Like, the on ice product matters. Like, yes, because it's a new building, people are going to want to go, but it's going to help if the team is actually really good too.
Absolutely. So let's transition from UBS to our last like large-ish topic here and go to Down on the Farm. And I don't have a ton of updates necessarily, just mainly because there has been kind of a break here in some of the action. But I know that Rus Nedelcov is not feeling better, but has tested better. So he should be back on the ice within a week or so. So that is great news. He's been off for a while with some foot injuries, or with a foot injury that just got re-aggravated type of thing. So that's good. Aturatu keeps doing things at the international level, put up 4 points. So for Team Finland, looked fantastic doing so. And they were playing a four-team tournament against Sweden, Russia, and the Czech Republic. Thomas Mahu also played for the Czech Republic, but he was fine. He's an extra player a third pair player for them. Same thing for Matias Rajaniemi with the Finnish squad. But what I wanted to do here is really kind of focus on the top prospects in the pipeline, just because I don't have a ton of updates. And so let's just talk about the top five guys in the Islanders prospect pool.
Sure.
And the way that I rank that, I have it on my YouTube channel, but just in case you haven't seen it, you listener at home, the way I rank it is NHLE. So that's NHL expected. And what that does is it takes whatever production rate that player has at their league. So let's say for Robin Salo, it's at the AHL. For Aturatu, it's the Liga. For William Zufour, it's at the QMJHL level. It takes their production rate, applies a translation factor that is essentially equates to the strength of that league. And then what it does actually is equates their production rate at an NHL level to show this player is playing at X NHL points where they are. And so our top five guys based off of NHLE are, in order, Robin Salo at 29. So he's playing at a basically 30-point pace for defensemen. Okay. Otto Koivula, 27. Arnaud Durandeau, those are both AHLers as well, at 25. Aturatu at 22.6, 23. And then Anatoly Golishev at 20 points. That is the top five prospects in the Islanders prospect pool. Five of those are at the AHL level. One, as you all know, Aturatu is at the Liga level. And that's good news.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, that's a great sign if you look at it that way too. And all things considered, since Atu is essentially the Islanders' first pick in this last draft, to have him be that much of an impact already is a really good sign.
Yeah, he's playing 2 points per game with his new team. He's only played 2 games, so sample size is still low. But he's got 4 points in those 2 games for Ukurit. Is absolutely, I wouldn't say dominant, but he's one of their go-to guys. He's their second-line center, but as this progresses, he might essentially be their first line guy. Olli Jokinen really trusts him, really likes him. He plays power play, penalty kill. He is all over the place for Jukurit. And it's really nice to see, because for a while there, he was not in my top five at all. And ever since he made that move to Jukurit, he has jumped and jumped quickly. We have to remember, he's, yes, not at the AHL level, but he's still playing pros, and he's playing against men at 19 years old.
Right, which is a good sign. We wanted him to get that level of competition.
Mm-hmm. And consistency, right? When he was with Karpat, he wasn't playing every night. And even when he was playing, it was like 9-10 minutes. Now he's playing every night for Jukurit, second line center, playing 17 to 18 minutes a night. Woo!
That's great. Woo. That's a big improvement. And, you know, you could tell me better than I know, but he more than likely projects as like a second line center type, right?
That's exactly what he projects at. Middle six center, so the second, third line center. Could be more, but as it stands now, it's like, yeah, probably second line center. But he's already ready for the North American game. The questions are not there. Can he play in North America? Yes. How good he will be is the question, which is wild, right? Mm-hmm. It's not can he play NHL hockey. Yes, he can. It's how good is he going to be at the NHL level is the question here. And that's already good to see from someone who you took in the middle of the second round.
Right, exactly. So, okay, that's a great sign. Love that.
And so outside of the top five, I really want to get to Simon Holmstrom, because he's just outside of the top five. And today he put up 2 points for the Bridgeport Islanders, so I imagine he's going to jump up above Anatoly Golishev. He's right there at 15.9 NHLE is what he's doing. So he's a 16-point NHLer. Not a lot. It's not really high. And we'll get to the numbers there in a second and their height, let's say. But he's playing much better for the Bridgeport Islanders and is definitely one of their top six guys and is every night doing something for them, even if it's not specifically showing up on the score sheet, where he wasn't necessarily doing that last year or the year before.
Right. Okay. So I could take that at least as a minimum at a step in the right direction.
Exactly. Now, with the numbers, and the reason I'm saying they're not very high is because they're not, right? Like, our best prospect is Robin Salo at 30 points, which is great, right? Like, you'll take a 30-point defenseman.
Yep.
But outside of that, we don't have a 30, 40, 50-point NHLer in there. And it really reflects the quality of the Islanders' prospect pool. It is not one of the best ones in the NHL, and I think we all knew that already. But when you look at those NHLEs, you're not seeing someone popping off the sheet going like, oh my God, this guy is ready to destroy. That's not the case. We have a lot of strong players, but a lot of role players as well. So take whatever the top five with a little bit of a grain of salt outside of Robin Salo, I would say. Because a 30-point defenseman, because he's played at the AHL level, you'll take that because there's a potential for more there, specifically when he's around better players.
Right, exactly. You took the words out of my mouth. Is that when the competition improves, I feel like he will also.
Exactly. So that's it for Down on the Farm. Are you ready for the quiz, Matt?
Let's do it.
As we do every week, there's a mystery New York Islander for you at home and you, Matt, to guess. You have 5 clues to guess who he is. They get progressively easier as we go, even though I've made them a little bit harder this time because you keep getting them the first or second try. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
1. I am a second round pick.
Could be just about anyone. We were just talking about him.
Incorrect, but good try. You know my recency bias when it comes to these. 2. I scored 16 points in 54 games during my draft year.
Scott Mayfield?
Incorrect. Good guess. 3. I played forward before moving to defense.
See, I was going to say Thomas Hickey, but that wouldn't make sense because he was a 4th overall pick.
Right, exactly.
Okay, don't know.
4. I played with Josh Hosang. Not in North America.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it Robin Sala?
We've already talked to... It is Robin Sala.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Robin Sala.
Boom. Good job by you. Five was everyone hopes I'll beat Devontae's 2.0.
There we go. I thought it was Sala. Okay.
You're right. That's good. I'm trying to make them a little bit harder, and I got you at four, so that I feel better about that.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Beauty. Do we want to move on to our social segment? What do you got first there?
All right. First one comes from Neil Best. He says, I am back at UBS Arena where I observed this amusing sign in the parking lot. And it's a picture of the sign that says, no honking, no tailgating per New York State regulations.
So a lot of people are worried about that, right? Like, we're not going to be able to tailgate. We're not going to be able to honk our horn. That's something that we all do. But wasn't that a rule at the Coliseum as well? You couldn't do that either?
Correct.
So do we actually think they're going to A, enforce that, and B, really? Like, are they going to live up to that?
I don't think it's going to be enforced. To me, this is just speculation on my part, but I think it's more of a liability thing from their end to say that the signs are there, so the rule's in place, but you know what I mean?
Right. Like, we have these things. We're told them not to, but we can't, like, go and arrest 20,000 people necessarily or tell them to leave because we kind of want their money. So we're just going to kind of deal with it, which makes a lot of sense, I suppose.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't think the parking lot is as big as the Coliseum was, but it's still decently sized, right? So it's going to take some getting used to, I think. Yeah, we're not going to have this tailgating thing figured out in game one.
And there's a couple different lots now. It's not like in the Coliseum where it's like plopped down right in the middle. It's like there's a couple different areas you can go to, I think.
Yeah, there's one across Hempstead Turnpike. Is it Hempstead Turnpike? It is, mm-hmm. Isn't it?
Yep.
There's one across from that, and then there's one essentially behind the arena on the other side. Is it not?
Yes, exactly.
So, like, they're not all directly on top of it, but I don't think anyone is going to care because... Well, not all arenas are built, or arenas or stadiums even, right? Because tailgating is also a football thing. They're not all built like the Nassau Coliseum. So, like, you know, we're all going to have to improvise a little bit. But I imagine after a week or so, or a couple of games, we're going to have this figured out pretty easily.
I would imagine so.
It also wouldn't really be upon them to be like, sorry, guys, did you not see the sign? We don't do the tailgating thing here. And everyone's like, but you have, like... almost 50 years of us doing that, and you're just going to be like, no, we can't do that anymore. Come on.
Doesn't check out.
No. Mine here comes from Andy Francis. I hope I pronounced that right. It's just the double S really throws me off. And after the game in Tampa, he puts out a tweet, says, you know the Isles power play is bad if I had to make a November video. And it's him... ranting isn't the right word, but it is kind of a rant. When I say rant, it makes it sound like I think negatively of the video, which I do not. And he talks about the power play and Matthew Barzal being on one side and someone else being on the other side and just not on their right side, on their good side. And he's dead right. Like, they're setting these guys up to fail.
Yeah, it was Barzal and Bailey. I watched the video. It's a good video. And Barzal's on the right and Bailey's on the left, which on the power play doesn't make much sense because there's no threat of a shot.
There's very little threat of a shot. And, like, the Islanders have made that work in the past where they've had Eberle on the right. But when I went through a very specific and prolific period of Islanders power play success, it was last year, where in 21 games they scored 15 power play goals. It was not Eberle doing most of the work. It was a guy called Oliver Wallstrom up on the left side. And then on the right side, you had Josh Bailey. So just like what Andy is saying here... and I'm sure Andy's not the first one to say it, but I'm certainly the loudest one, I would say. And he's got the tweet to back it up. He's right. Like, you can't have Bailey up on the left and then Matthew Barzal on the right. There's no room for them because there's no room for them to open up on a shot for a one-timer. They're already at a disadvantage here. And they also, like, you've got Bailey out there. He's just not a shot threat. No. So going forward for the Islanders on the power play, we talked about Josh Bailey not being around. This might be a little bit of a blessing in disguise because they're going to have to try someone else out there.
Exactly. So like you said, maybe blessing in disguise. Yeah. My next one is from Rant or Reason on Twitter. And it's a screen grab of season opening road trips of 9+ games in NHL history.
Okay.
This is from the NHL Network. And there are, let's see, 6 examples of teams that started with 9 games or more on the road to start their season.
Mm-hmm.
And the Islanders finished with the best record of those teams at 5-6-2. You had the 2020 and 2021 San Jose Sharks go 5-6-1. The 2013-14 Rangers, who I believe went to a Stanley Cup final that year, went 3-6 to open their season. 07-08 Devils 3-5-1. 99-2000 Hurricanes 4-2-0-3. And 1980-81 Nordiques went 1-6-0-2.
Yeah, like they're not dead. It doesn't look great, obviously, but they're not dead. Like a lot of people have said, let me see them play at home for a few games, and if they're playing like this at home and the record is like this after a couple of home games, all right, fine. But until then, let's chill a little bit here.
Right. Like, and I know I saw, you might have even tweeted at someone who brought this up, but I've seen a lot of the you have to be in a playoffs by Thanksgiving thing, like how that's a thing. What does the data say about teams who don't play their first home game until the week of American Thanksgiving?
Right. Like, and we also have to remember the season, like we said before, a season started later than it usually does.
Right.
We're like, it's not at the same point anymore. It's just, I'm really not worried here. There's a little bit of concern because it doesn't feel great, but I'm not going like, oh boy, time to blow it up. Can't wait to, who's the consensus number one overall? Tells you, like, yeah, exactly. I don't know, because I'm not paying attention to that, because I don't think the Islanders are ever going to be in that position.
No, me either.
My final one here comes from at NHL Rumors Daily. I think we all know who NRD is. Well, we don't know who the individual is, but we know the account anyways. The Isles absolutely make sense as a Sam Girard landing spot. The Boychuk trade, Letty removal was huge to the cap figure come deadline day. And if Samuel Girard is in play, and I believe he is, I've heard that name bounced around before, not just through NRD, but a number of people, the Islanders have to bite on that. Even though he's not a right shot defenseman, he's a lefty, but he's not old. He's only 23, has 9 points in 10 games this year, is a 30-point player at least, had 32 last year, of course playing with Colorado. And I believe the cap is pretty manageable. I'm just trying to bring it up here if I can. My internet is a little bit slow.
5 and change, I think, right?
That's what I feel, but I want to confirm it before I speak it. Samuel Girard, 5 exactly until it looks like the sun explodes. Five exactly up until 26-27. No signing bonuses, straight $5 million every year.
But he's a good defenseman.
He's a good offensive puck-carrying defenseman.
He played 23 minutes a night last year.
He's a
damn good team.
Yeah, he's a good player. Now, if Robin Salo can mimic that, then you don't need to, and you're paying Robin Salo a whole heck of a lot less than this guy. And even if you have to re-sign him, it's not going to be at $5 million. But it's the interesting thing, right? Like $5 million? Yeah, the Islanders can afford that this year and next and throughout it. No problems. No questions asked. They can go shopping for more even this year with that.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's one that makes sense. And he's on the young side, too. It's not like you're trading for a 30-year-old who you're renting for 2 years or anything like that. Like, no, this could be a part of your youth into the core. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, right? Like, you're bringing in a 23-year-old who, I'm just trying to find out when his birthday is here, May 12th. He's not turning 24 until the end of the season.
Right.
So
you'll be getting him at his peak and through his peak.
Exactly. So it's not going to be cheap, obviously, but something to keep an eye on there for sure.
Yeah, I would do just about whatever it takes to get him in here.
Yeah, I would seriously consider it. So do you have anything else for the social?
That was it.
All right, let's get some plugs in here. Let's see how many I remember from hearing you do it 220 times beforehand. Make sure to follow us on our social media platforms. That's Eyes on Isles FS on Twitter. make sure to follow us on Facebook as well. Go to the website, eyesonisles.com. Read everything we do multiple times a day, because thank you for that. Also, get us on Patreon. If you're looking for post-game content, we do a post-game podcast after every single New York Islanders game. $5 a month gets you those podcasts. Also, a Discord channel. We're going to be doing a mailbag as well. We do one every week, but this week's a little bit different. With Matt's voice, we're giving him a little bit of a break. And so I'm going to do the mailbag with the patrons live. So get in on that as well. A whole community of 150 patrons there. A lot of people to join in. And I feel like I'm missing something else, Matt. Am I missing something?
Fan-sided app.
Get us on the fan-sided app as well if you want to get us on your mobile phone. We don't have an Eyes on Isles app specifically, but get through the fan-sided app and you'll get our updates on your telephone.
Beautiful. You did it.
So that'll do it here for us in episode 222. Thank you for joining. Thank you for listening. Make sure to hit the subscribe and like button. It helps us reach a number of more people. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll see you next week.